Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, we're listening. We are back with season two. I have my partner in crime, Amadi Martin, with us tonight. Amadi, say hello to everybody out there in this.
What's up? Welcome back, big bro.
It's been nice being away from y'all, but I've missed you guys so much. I wanted to get back to this and do what we do all the time, is just talk and do what we do. How you feeling, Amadi? How was your week? How was your weekend?
I'm feeling great, bro. Had a really good time at work, you know, trying to get this money, you know, spending some time on a plantation, came home and spent some time with the children, man. Really looking forward to next weekend, though.
I hear that. Well, we'll talk about that next week, whatever you're doing next weekend. But what I wanted to do, and I'm glad that I found this person to help me out with this, you know, we've been talking about, you know, separation, what happens, should you stay for the kids, so on and so on, but we never really tapped into the angle of what happens to the children when parents separate or divorce. So I have this lovely young lady that has a book that's coming out that's actually going to be talking to us today about that subject in particular. This person, her name is Deja M. Rice. She's originally from Spring Valley, New York, even though she currently lives in Rocky Mount, North Carolina. She will relocate to Atlanta, where she will pursue her MFA in acting and fulfill a teaching assistantship at the University of Georgia Department of Theater and Film Studies in Athens. Deja currently holds a BA in theater and double concentration in performance and education. She has spent most of her professional career acting on stage both nationally and internationally and enhancing the education of youth through the performing arts. Deja also serves in a music ministry with her husband, John Rice, as a worship duo called The Rices. So, Amadi, please welcome to our show, Deja M. Rice. Deja, hello. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
We are great.
Yo, you know what? We really need some, like, a button here for, like, a round of applause. Like, that's really what we need.
What, you're supposed to be clapping.
Bro, listen, man, I'm not clapping. What's wrong with you? What am I, four? You can clap. Yeah, clap.
You should have clapped.
Bro, you're something special,
Deja's
man.
Deja's here, man. Act right. Late.
Right. Relax. Deja, welcome to the show, Deja. It's great to hear from you.
Thank you guys for having me on. I'm really excited about our conversation tonight.
Good. Well, if you don't mind, Greg, can we get right into it? Greg? Hey, Deja, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Good. So let's jump right into it, okay? How should we introduce separation to our children?
I say that the best way to introduce separation to your children is just to be honest, because even though that's hard to do, it's necessary. You have to expose them to the reality that they are a part of. And I don't think it's fair to them to do anything other than that.
Okay. I like that. I'm trying to see what happened to Greg. Very interesting. I mean, you know, as luck would have it, he got kicked out of his own show. It's kind of interesting.
maybe
you know what?
It's purpose for you to ask these questions, Amadi. So
I don't know if it's safe to continue this without supervision, but let's go ahead and continue these questions,
be,
right? Because I'm sure this is...
You'll be fine.
Yeah,
you can do
is,
it.
Well, yeah, I'm going to put my big boy pants on, and I'm going to go ahead and freestyle. So we're going to go ahead and have some fun tonight, all right? But I think that is an important topic that we're talking about, and that actually leads into our next question. And the next question is going to be, well, how do you believe that the separation affects the children? How do you believe this affects?
Well, it's not only a belief, it's something that I went through, which is the reason for me writing my book. So I feel like whatever the parents are feeling, whatever the parents are experiencing, the children are experiencing the same thing. And I would even go on the record and say they're experiencing it even double over. And the reason why is because as adults, even though you may come in contact with some things that you've never had to experience before, you also have like a more developed and mature perspective on life. And so you know how to handle those things that happen a little easier. Now, children, they haven't been around that long, and so there's a lot they don't understand, and it's a lot that they don't know how to process and handle. So the feelings that they have, the, you know, all of the different emotions that they have to deal with and the thoughts that they have when they see their family being broken apart, they don't understand that stuff. And so especially if the adults don't find it necessary or can't talk to the children about it, it makes it that much more difficult because then they just are, you know, plagued with confusion and pain that they don't even know how to deal with, and sometimes they don't even know that they are dealing with those things. And so,
this is something that you've experienced personally, huh?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I grew to understand that my parents may not have thought it was safe for me to know the truth about what was happening, or they didn't know how to talk to me about things. But I also realized how imperative it was for parents to try to figure it out, to try to figure out how to tell their kids the truth when they're experiencing, you know, a broken home. Because the confusion that you grow up with, I say this a lot, and it's not in my book because I didn't want to give anybody any credit. But
yeah, you
don't
want to give away too many tidbits.
No,
don't read the book.
No. I don't want people to. I don't want to have to pay more people than I have to.
But you want people to get the book.
Absolutely, but you know, there's one piece of knowledge that I'll share with people as it concerns children. You know, as Greg stated earlier, I was partly an education major, and so when we have education courses, we talk about cognitive development. And in cognitive development, we learn that we have these things in our minds called schemes. And in these schemes, they're like these category boxes where when we learn new information, we pack that information in these boxes according to, you know, how they're categorized, you know. And so what happens is when we learn new information, when we experience new things, we then experience a mental interruption, and we have to then try to process that new information and fit it into one of those schemes. Now, children don't normally know how to do that, you know, without some type of guidance, without some type of help with processing that information. And when they're going through divorce, that's heavy. You know, that's much heavier than, you know, a fire truck is red or the sky is blue. That's some heavy stuff.
Well, let me ask you real quick so I can get some personal insight. What age is your earliest recollection of that you had to start going through this yourself?
At eight, when my parents split up, when I realized that my dad was no longer consistently in the house with us, I started to go through that interruption. And like I said, I was a child, so I didn't know how to process it, and they didn't talk to me candidly about what was happening. And so I just tried to, because of simple cognitive development theory, I still tried to process that information, but I processed it in a very egocentric, typical child, you know, egocentric and very toxic way ultimately.
What do you think some of your reactions were when you started realizing that this was happening in the house?
Oh, man. Okay, so the first thing I did that I can remember is blame it on my mom. I blame everything on my mother. And it's because not only did my parents split up, but not long after my parents split up, my mom and her five children moved to South Carolina, which you know is like over 800 miles away from New York. And so, yes, so my mother, I like to say, she was the only constant. I thought I wasn't seeing my dad constantly anymore, and things were different, but my mother was the constant. She looked like the person that was in control, and so I started to place the blame on her for everything, the confusion I was going through, you know, whatever pain I was feeling, whatever misunderstanding I had. She was the blame for all of it. Now, of course, no, she really wasn't the blame, but but as a child, that's how I looked at it. So that was the first time that I can remember, you know, acting out in a way that was not healthy as a result of what I was experiencing.
Okay, okay. Well, I understand that Greg has joined us. Greg, are you
no,
on?
No, I haven't. No, I'm not here.
Okay, great, great. So then we're going to go ahead and keep moving right along. Fucking guy, man. Kind of threw me off there, buddy. Appreciate you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, bro, you're the worst, man. No, I can only imagine what you had to go through at that time. I mean, must have been trying time, especially as a child. Every second that we get, though, while we're on there, I want to go ahead and get a chance to give your book a plug. It's and if you want to go order it, you can go to www.thericescent.com/books. Or is that /books? Once again, that's www.thericescent.com/books. Greg, you have any questions? Anyone to take over the questions?
No. You're doing a pretty good
job. No
problem.
Be quiet. So relax. All right. So
I'll relax.
Let's get right back into it. So come on, bro. I'm really, really getting the hang of it. Appreciate it. What was the reason? Relax, man. Relax. What was the reason for creating Daddy's Girl?
Yeah, so Daddy's Girl was birthed out of a testimony that I feel like I have. I have a redemption story. And so I know I'm not unique in a sense that I'm the only child who grew up in a broken home and, you know, felt what I felt, thought how I thought, and acted out in the ways that I did. And so I acknowledge that, and I'm not the only one who's gone through it. I'm not the last to go through it either. And so I feel mandated, and I feel called to help other people understand what they have experienced or are experiencing right now, and also how to deal with it and heal from it. And so that's why I wrote Daddy's Girl. It's just to help other people know that, hey, you're not the only person that goes through this, and this is how I handled it. Now, you have to find your own process, but you can experience redemption and healing.
Well, let me ask
Deja,
you a personal
question. Go ahead, Mark.
No, man, hold on. I'm on a roll, bro.
Damn, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So aggressive, man.
Go back on your roll, man. I'm sorry.
Dude, man, fall back, bro. Yo, so check this out. So I have a question because I'm at – man, see, here you go again. Interrupting me, bro. Listen, so serious question, though, because I myself have stepdaughter, and, you know, she is from a divorced family. So I was wondering, did you have somebody that stepped in and took that place of a father figure after your mother and your father divorced? And then I'll go into I want to go into how maybe there's a difference here or a little bit on my personal side.
Temporarily, because after my mom and dad had been split up for a little while, my mom finally started entertaining the company of another man. And when I tell you, he was a great man. I mean, looking back on it now, he did all the things that he was supposed to do, from what I know, you know. But I didn't accept him. I didn't accept him. And I like to think, my mother has never said this, but I like to think that us as children rejecting him was probably a huge reason. I'm pretty sure we did. And so I'm pretty sure he tried. I remember him doing a lot of the things that a man who's stepping in a situation like that should do, but we just wouldn't let him be great. We wouldn't let him be great. And the reason why is because no matter what he did, no matter how much good he was doing or how much he was benefiting our household or how much we were benefiting from him, we looked at it as you're not our father. You're not our father, and you cannot take the place of our father. And what we didn't realize then was that he wasn't trying to take our father's place. He was just doing what a good man does, you know. So, yeah, we had somebody who stepped in temporarily, but it didn't last. for other reasons too, of course, that we didn't know of, but for that reason, I'd like to believe too.
That probably goes into, Greg, another topic that I would like to bring onto the show one week, regarding how important it is that with, especially within the black household, with broken families, that there is a male figure to replace and a female figure to replace, you know, on the other side, so that the families stay together in this communication, because that's the only way that we can heal each other. But we'll save that for another show.
Yeah,
so, Greg, I would like
you
to join us. I appreciate that. Thank you, dump truck. Appreciate you. Do me a favor. I would like you to participate in your own show. So if you wouldn't mind asking the next question, bro. What's wrong?
Sure, that's
man?
Not a problem.
Come on.
No, but she's bringing up a valid point, because like I came from a broken home as well. But as a man, it was different for me, because you know, I just look around my neighborhood and I can see different men that I can actually used to be my role models to grow up to be a man. But you're saying, hey, you know, you're not my dad. You can't tell me what to do.
Yeah.
I need my dad. And that's the thing that we never even thought about, Amadi, as being boys growing up to be men. You know, as a female growing up without their dad in the house. And I guess that's a very hard thing to actually try to overcome. And a lot of different things can happen from there. Because you're trying to find that true love that you're looking for from your father, and you're trying to find it in other places. It's pretty interesting.
I think you're right,
and
Greg.
I think
you're right.
Yeah, that came, and that perspective kind of surfaced later on in life, looking for a male figure in all the wrong ways and all the wrong places. But as a child, and I don't know, can I ask you guys, did you all know your fathers prior to realizing that, you know, like a patriarchal presence was missing? Did you know your fathers initially or not?
Well, for me, my dad left probably around the same time as you said in your book when your dad left. I was like 8 years old. My dad said, I'm leaving. And I'm like, okay, see you later, Dad. But, you know, my dad moved to the Bronx. And he was just a half an hour away. Whenever I needed him, he was there. But for the things that I needed at that particular time at my house, you know, it was a void. You know, I had my older brothers trying to teach me. And then I'm going around teaching other people how to be men. And that was all wrong.
Yeah, what a fine job you did, bro.
But that's the thing that we don't think about. Like, even dating, when I was younger, I would like to date women, and I know I'm going to be backlash.
Did you say date?
I would like to date women that, you know, have daddy issues. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. That's cool for me. But not realizing that this woman is searching for something that she really needs, and a lot of guys out there look for that because they don't want to have, you know, all the problems and issues of trying to live up to that good old guy that their father is supposed to be. They just want to be that person that whatever they do, whatever they say, whatever they do in the streets, the woman will be accepted of that. But, you know, in your book, you talked about that. You said you found, you know, different things to try to cope of, you know, whatever your dad was not there for. And then you said you found a man in God. And then when you found him, you still fell back, you know, back into whatever ways you were. You know,
At what age do these ways start? Because I have a 9-year-old daughter, so I'm trying to keep an eye on this.
Answer
mine first.
Okay, so what question? Answer mine first. Who said that? Hamadi?
No, Gregory.
Greg. Okay, so what was your question?
Basically, when you was trying to find yourself and you found yourself into the church and you found this guy, according to your book, you found a guy, he introduced you back into Christ and back into God, and you felt okay, but after a while it wasn't sufficient enough for you and you went back to whatever ways that you were doing before. What was you looking for?
I had no idea what I was looking for. I am a firm believer that if you don't know where you come from, if you don't know who you come from, then you don't know who you are. And if you don't know who you are, then you don't know what you need. And so even though I had my father in the house with me as a young girl, and even though my father was still present in my life, maybe not consistently, but whatever the reason may be, but he was still present in my life. There was still a lot of things that I missed out on. There was still a lot of lessons that I didn't learn that did not prepare me for dating a man. And so when I met this guy, I was captured by or I was intrigued by something new. He was different from the other guys that I had been dating. And so and he seemed like a really good guy. He was. He was a really good guy. But even though he was in Christ, even though he introduced me to a relationship with Christ, even though he was awesome, he wasn't the right one for me. Why? Because I was intrigued with him. I was too intrigued with him, this new thing. And like I said in my book, you know, he was great enough to kind of catch me, but he wasn't what I needed to reel me in. And so eventually, you know, I got tired of this surface feeling, and I got bored.
Right.
And so I kind of kicked them to the curb. But what happened for me was that even though my decision to establish a relationship with Christ was impulsive because of a man, that doesn't mean that it was unreal. It really happened, and so I was able to take that from that relationship, and that kick-started, you know, my spiritual walk. And so I'll never say that I got nothing out of that relationship because, yeah, I got a whole lot, you know, but
that's just how it works
sometimes. Sometimes there's just a conduit to get you to your next level, but the person is not supposed to be it's not supposed to be permanent. The person is just seasonal. But you get what you're supposed to get out of the experience, and then you move on. And that's what that was.
Okay. You can answer Marty's question now.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I have a 9-year-old daughter. So, at what age?
9-year-old daughter. All right.
Yeah, so what age did you start, you know?
I don't know, Marty. What are you asking?
Well, you know, she said she started finding, what was your, I don't know exact wording was, but started looking for other types of, and I'm sure that would make for a great show, like another show, where I'd probably be a little bit crazier, but, yeah. So around what age, so I can keep my eyes out?
Yeah, I'd be glad to help you with that, Hamadi. So everybody's going to be different, number one. But I'll just tell you, for me, I think 16 was around the time when I really, really started kind of hopping from guy to guy, just kind of like trying different things out to see what would fill me. And I didn't know how to articulate that then, but that's what it was. I was just trying to see what would stick, you know, what was my thing, who would be there for the long haul, and I didn't understand that none of them would be. But 16 was that age, and I think and I don't think that's even unique to a person who grows up in a broken home. I think that that is kind of common for all 16-year-old girls. I think that's just the age where girls just, you know, really start digging on guys really hard, and they just kind of hop from place to place. Now, the difference between a child that grows up in a broken home and a child who does not, a child that doesn't grow up in a broken home, they have more of a concrete idea of what they should be looking for. So even if they dabble in a few relationships, they already know in the back of their minds, this ain't it, you know. But a child that grows up in a broken home, they don't know what they're looking for. They don't have a clue. And so they're kind of just going through, like I call it in my book, trial and error, trying to see, like, oh, is this it? Is this love? Is this love? Is sex love? Is me being, you know, happy with this person all the time love? Is me being with this person every second of the day love? You know, and you have all these different representatives of love in your head, and you have no idea what's the real thing. So
you said something pretty interesting in your book, Deja. You were talking about women find men and use the analogy of shoe size. You know, sometimes you find a shoe, but the shoe doesn't fit properly. But some people still stay with that shoe and they think that's the right fit for them. You know, can you dive a little bit more into that and explain to our audience what you mean by that?
Yeah,
come on, man. We all know what that means.
Relax.
Yeah, so I use the analogy of, you know, a shoe to a man because every woman understands shoe shopping. Sometimes we can see a really cute shoe or aesthetically pleasing shoe that we know is not the right fit for us, but we try to wear it anyway just because it looks good. And a lot of times that's the same way we try to find a man, is we, you know, we look at the aesthetics. We look at what looks good on the surface, you know, what appeases the eye. But we don't pay attention to, is this what I really need? Is this going to leave me with cuts and bruises 2 months from now? Or is this something that I'm going to be comfortable in and I can walk a mile in it, you know? We don't think about that. We're just looking at, oh, he's cute. Oh, he got a car, he got a job, blah, 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 you know, whatever, what have you. And we don't even think about the necessary things that come along with, you know, being in a relationship with a man for a long time. But a lot of times it's because we simply don't know. We don't know what to look for. And so that's why I said, along with that analogy, if you know your shoe size, then you know what doesn't fit, and you're not going to waste your time, you know, obtaining all these cuts and bruises from shoes that are too small. But if you don't know your shoe size, if you don't know what you need, if you don't know what's supposed to fill you as an individual, then you'll just go through trial and error, trying on all these shoes, and before you know it, you'll have bunions and cuts and all this other stuff, even fungi, you know, trying
have a lot of miles on your shoes.
Now you're preaching. Look, now you have a lot of miles on your shoes.
And nobody wants worn-out shoes, bruh.
But that brings an interesting thought, because, like, at our age, Mahdi and I are in our early 40s, or Mahdi's in his late 30s, I think. I'm sorry I shot you out like that. But
what are you talking about, bro?
I know, but a lot
That's
of people that, you know, they get married at, you know, 21, 22, they think they find the right size, and then they get divorced, and then they back into the market, and they're trying to find the right man for them or the right woman for them, but now they have all these different bad ideas of what a person is supposed to be. And some people just say, I'm not going to deal with it no more, because they just dealt with all these bad things that they knew wasn't right for them. So I really like that part of your book when you brought that out. That really touched home, that a lot of people don't really realize until they get older. They think they can take on the world when they're at a young age. And for you to understand that as being younger than us, and that is a very, very good thing that you have learned on your own, and I commend you on that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you. Like I said in my book, it took trial and error to learn it. But, you know, it all works together for good, I believe. I mean, you don't go through
tell the listeners. Tell the listeners again where they can get your book at, Deja.
Yeah, so if you go to www.therisesent.com /books, you can pre-order my book this Friday. And then it'll be released on Father's Day, June 17th.
June 17th. So for the 200 people listening to the show right now, listen, June 17th, Father's Day. Deja's book. she gave you the website.
Wow.
So please go visit and support.
Yeah.
But you guys are into multiple things. It's not just the book that you're dealing with here. You guys, you and your husband, do a lot of different things. What are you guys actually into, Deja?
Yeah, so my husband and I, we have a company called the Rices Enterprises, and it's a multifaceted umbrella company that covers marriage, art, and ministry. So like you mentioned earlier, we have a music ministry together called the Rices, and we also dabble in the performing arts. We both write, we playwright, we songwrite, we also act. And I'm actually going to school to get my Master's of Fine Art in acting, so I take it really seriously. And then also, as you see, we write books, and so we're just doing it all, just discovering every day the different gifts that we've been blessed with and just, you know, utilizing them to do whatever it is we think God has called us to do.
You guys are like the 2018 Sonny and Cher.
Look, I'll take it. Sonny and Cher was popping.
Oh, yeah, they were.
Yeah, I'm really showing my age, dude. If anybody else,
yeah, you really are. I allowed you to
bro.
Do it, too.
Oh, God, I walked right into that.
But
they're not anymore, they're not.
Who do you recommend? Who do you recommend to read this book of yours?
I'm sorry, say that again, Greg.
Who do you recommend to read this book?
Everybody,
everybody. And I, you know what? I'm not even going to try to front and act like the title Daddy's Girl does not doesn't speak to a specific reader. It would seem like, oh, only women can read this book, you know, only women who intend on having a direct connection or direct relationship with their natural father can read this book, but that's not true. I believe that anybody who wants to be healed from any type of brokenness can pick this book up and read it. And I don't know how many dudes would be comfortable with saying, like, oh, yeah, I'm reading this book. It's called Daddy Girl. And the guys won't be like, what are you reading? but the message is so powerful and so universal that really, whether you tell your friends about it or not, anybody who needs to be healed from any brokenness can read this book. And the reason why I brought up women who can't have direct connections with their natural fathers is because I realize that's a reality. A reality is that you will want, you will yearn for a relationship with your natural father. And the reality is that everybody won't be able to have it. And so you have to know at the end of the day that your healing, that your redemption is not connected to people. Even though my story ended with me and my dad having a mutual understanding of things and having a healthy relationship, I also understand that if he never would have been what I wanted to be or what I thought was worthy of a relationship. If he never was that, I still would have been able to be healed, I still would have been able to be redeemed, and I still would have been made whole because I understand that my healing is mine. My redemption is mine. Whether
right.
I'm whole or not, it's up to me. It doesn't belong to anybody else. It's nobody else's call. Whether I'm healed and whether I'm whole, that's my call. And so that's my process,
right.
And I can have that regardless of who I'm connected to. So anybody can read this book and get something out of it.
Cool. That was one of my questions I was going to ask you, but you seem like you answered it already, so that's cool.
But the
cool thing about it is that you're telling us that everybody can read this book, but a lot of times, you know, I find that there's a lot of people out there that try to go into relationships and have their significant other be the person to redeem them or make them happy. What do you say to that?
I don't think that people make people happy. And I know that sounds kind of cliche because I know we hear it all the time, but I don't believe that people make people happy. I think people can put
mm-hmm.
a smile on your face. People can say nice things and do nice things and make you feel warm and fuzzy inside and fill your love
mm-hmm.
tank, as me and my husband like to say. But another person
can't fill your
make
love
me
tank.
Happy. Yeah, fill my love tank. You know, but another person can't make me happy because happiness comes from within. And if you walk away today, I may be hurt, I may experience pain, but there still has to be some happiness in my life or else I'll die in pain. I'll die in disappointment. And so I don't believe that it's healthy. I do realize that people's happiness is connected to other people sometimes, but I don't believe
mm-hmm.
it's healthy for a person's happiness
right.
to be connected to people.
All right. What do you think, Amadi?
I like when people do right. No, I'm serious. I like when people do things for me, so I'm happy then. Right.
Oh,
so that's
okay.
What I think. You gotta be like, yeah. If somebody, you know, wifey does things for me and it makes me absolutely ecstatic. I mean, she cooks
mm-hmm.
for me. Does my like? She's great. So yeah, there's happy. I don't necessarily agree with your answer, Deja. I'm sorry. I gotta be that guy. But yeah, and
yeah.
Honestly, consistency makes me very happy. Being able to
mm-hmm.
come home, have dinner ready, those things make me happy. So, yeah, no, I'm going to disagree. Those things make me very happy.
Well,
I'm with you on that, Amadi, but I'm also with Deja with this as well, too. But the thing is that I'm really looking at is when you look at it from a child's perspective, they would say, well, my dad wasn't there or my mom wasn't there. You know, well, now I get into this relationship. This person has to fill that void. And that's the problem I think that we're trying to get at right now is that another person can't fill in that void. You know, you need to heal yourself. And if you don't heal yourself, you know, when you get into that next relationship, whoever it's going to be with, it's going to be a lot of problems because that person doesn't understand the problems that you had growing up. It has met you when you were 19, 20, 30, 40, and you have all these problems that you had when you was a kid, and you put that all the way up to your adulthood. You know, how can I fix that? I can't. I don't know anything about that. So
I'm curious, Deja. I have a question for you, Deja. Growing up, when there was another male figure with your mother, and he was trying to do things for you, did you ever just miss the part of having that male figure around so that you were at least more open-minded and more willing to accept some of the loving that he was trying to give you? Or was it just constantly resentment?
It wasn't constant. That's a really good question, Hamadi. It wasn't constant. I remember having moments of like, you might be all right. You know,
right.
we had a lot of moments, me and that gentleman, where I just kind of felt like, oh, okay, you're okay. But there was always this pull, like, you're not my dad, so don't try to correct me. Like, you can buy me things, you can show up to games, you can do all of that good stuff, but don't try to correct me because now you're getting out of line. It was those moments where it was like, all right, know your place. But I have to say, the reason why I asked you all earlier, if you knew your father before you started looking at other male figures and inviting that guidance into your life, is because I actually think that I probably would have been more open to him if I did not know my father.
Mm. So nobody would take your love from your dad, period.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have had anything to compare him to.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't have had anything to compare him to. So, you know, eventually we see everybody else with their fathers and we realize, you know, oh, snap, I don't have no man in my house, you know. So you might be more receptive to a man coming in. You're like, oh, this is cool. Now we got a man in the house. But I have been there. I had a man in my house, and he was my dad. And this was a man that I actually still had contact with. Like, my dad never left and just bounced on us and never showed up again. That wasn't my story. So I had somebody who I was very much, you know, in love with, my dad, my father, my birth father.
Right.
And I had, even though he wasn't around consistently, that other man, he had to match up to that, and he could never match up to that. And I didn't realize
that he wasn't trying to.
You know, I didn't realize back then that he wasn't trying to. He was just, like I said earlier, doing what a man does. But as a child, I didn't understand that. And I think, Hamadi, to answer your question, that it would have been a lot easier for me to receive him if I didn't know my natural father.
Did your mother ever take time to explain the situation? I think that goes back to one of the questions we were talking about earlier. Did she get back to time to explain to you what this person was doing and what was going on? I mean, you know, I guess sometimes as adults we think the children don't understand, so we tend to hide and shield them from these type of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, my mother, she did. She tried to protect me, and you guys have to understand as well, I was the baby of five. I was the baby of five for my mother and my father. For my mother and my father. So for my mother, I was her baby. So she wasn't trying to contaminate my innocence at all. You know, she was trying to protect me. And I think the same with my father. That's the reason why he didn't talk to me about a lot, too, is because they were trying to protect me. They didn't think I would understand. They didn't think that I should know the truth about some things. And so clearly that backfired on them, but they were just doing what they thought was right for me. And so eventually when my mother saw me acting out, you know, and she tried to help me understand, I didn't want to hear her. because I had already formulated, absolutely, I had already formulated another truth in my mind. And my truth was a lie, but in my mind, it was the truth because it was all I had to stand on.
I think a lot of young adults go through that. You know, they don't understand what they're supposed to do or what's happening within their lives because their parents separated and their parents say, well, mommy or daddy had to get another job in another state. Mommy and daddy will be back. Mm-hmm. And then you just start going through your own mind and say, okay, this is what mommy and daddy's doing and they're going to get back together sooner or later. And that doesn't happen, then you get really discouraged. So
yeah.
I do understand what you're saying with that. And I think we try to protect our children from those hurtful mm-hmm. truths, but you know, in the long run, it could be very damaging, like you were stating in your book. That's
mm-hmm.
pretty interesting. So I know that you have this book, and I know that you are a very devout Christian of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what would you say for people that are not into Christianity, that's not into religion? Can they still read this book? Would it still be beneficial to them?
Yes, I hope that they still would be able to read the book. And the reason why mm-hmm. I answer that way is because I know a lot of times when people use a language that we can't understand,
mm-hmm.
it kind of stifles our ability to look past that and get to the meat of the message.
Mm-hmm.
So whereas I speak a lot about my practices as a Christian and a believer of Christ, I speak that way because that's my language. That is how
right.
I was able to overcome my obstacles, right? But
right.
if you look beneath all of that fluff, you'll see that there's just a universal message of take ownership of your life, be healed, be free, be redeemed, because you can be. And if they can look beyond that, you know, or beneath, you know, my personal practices, then they'll find that. And so whether that looks like you going to your own spiritual God for whatever strength you need, or whether that means you look to the universe for whatever energy you need, if you think that all of the power and strength that you need lies within yourself, you have to be able to pull from that source. You have to be able to pull from that place, because in this process of redemption, you are going to get weak. And you are going to you're going to need to pull from something higher than yourself to make it through.
Right.
And so that was my purpose of talking about my spiritual practices that helped me, but I realized that everybody's not spiritual. So whatever that looks like for you, do it, because, like I said before, healing is everybody's.
Hey, Deja,
absolutely.
did you ever heal the broken relationship with your parents? You know what? No, don't answer that. Let's save that for the people. They need to go out and buy that book. That's very important. But with that being said, do you believe that you like how I did that, right? Yeah. But for real, can a person heal from a broken relationship with their parents? Do you believe that? I mean, even if the relationship is never redeemed or established?
Yes. Yes, they can. And the reason why is because of what I said earlier, that your healing and your redemption and your freedom is not your parent. It's yours. And so even if you never have a relationship with your father, even if you never have a relationship with your mom, because there are men going through problems because their moms run around too, let's be clear. And so if they never established a direct relationship with you, you can still be healed because it's yours. And that's why I said I believe that people can't really make you happy, because you have to be able to find that happiness even if your father never says I'm sorry, even if your mom never comes back from that work trip. You know, if it never happens for you the way you envisioned or the way your ideals made you believe that it should happen, you have to still find your happiness, because life goes on. And you can either choose to move on with life in a healthy way, in a responsible way, in an empowered way, or you can die in disappointment. And nobody wants to do that.
Mm-hmm. So that's a good response. I love that. But what would we say to, like Kabadi said, he has a 9-year-old daughter, I have 2 teenage daughters. What do we say to them?
Mm-hmm.
Even, like,
mm-hmm.
if... Mahdi has the situation that he has a stepdaughter now. You know, how does he actually try to get closer to this woman so she can understand that he's not against her but for her, and not allow her to go through those trials and tribulations like you said you went through. You know, what are ideas that you have that you could give to our audience and also to Amadi that he can actually, you know, nurture this young woman?
Yeah, I would say in whatever you're doing, if you're doing the right thing and you believe that you're doing the right thing, be consistent in what you're doing. Be ever present in her life and let her know if you are missing in action sometimes, be very, very honest about why. Because if you tell her the truth about what's going on, she won't have to try to figure it out in her mind and come up with these lies, you know. You just be open. I think that would have helped me a lot if my parents just would have been a lot more open with me about what was going on. I know that there were sometimes, you know, I would call my dad for money, and let me be clear, there was a time where I reduced my relationship with my father to just calling him for money, and that wasn't his fault, that was mine. You know, but
right.
He had to try to deal with that even though it wasn't his fault. And so even when I would call him and he didn't have it, my father made the mistake of he was trying to be like super dad. So he would say like, yeah, I got it. I'm going to send it in a little bit, knowing that he didn't have it.
Right.
And so if he just would have been honest and said, you know, I really don't have it right now. I'm working a lot. I got this going on and that going on, you know, but I can't do it right now, but let's try to figure out a way to get you what you need. You know, just be honest, just be open. I would have appreciated that a lot more, and the results would have been different. And so I just think honesty and consistency is the key, honestly. And I think there's probably more to it than that, but that's what would have helped me.
Well, I'm going to tell you some specific things that have helped me. Family trips, very important. Well, you know, the whole yacht trip to Grenada, that was one big thing that probably put it over the top. But then, of course,
you
have
simple
things
like we really cared. Where'd you went? But keep going.
I'm sorry. I'm talking to our listeners,
he's,
bro.
He's
fall back. Relax.
He's finding a moment to brag on himself.
Yeah. So, for the 299 people that are listening to us right now, okay, they need to understand. And then the other thing, it's simple things like doing homework, you know what I mean, sitting down, spending time, helping them with their reading, you know. You build these small relationships, small battles you win, all right? So, all right, that's all I wanted to add, Greg. Thank you.
That's really good, Hamadi, for people who are close to the children. But for people who are almost 1,000 miles away from their child, that's a little more difficult.
Right.
It's a little tricky. And so, yes, if you can physically touch your child, I mean, physically touch him as much as possible. Be there because you can be. And if you're not, and your child knows that you're, like, right around the corner, they're going to pick up on that, you know. And so, yes, be present in the ways that you can be. If that means calling more often because you are, you know, 5 states away. If that means just calling a little more, call more. If that means popping up because you have the ability to be there physically, do that a little more. But what I'm saying is whatever you can do, do it consistently because that's what kids need, consistency.
All right.
And the truth. They don't need fairy tales.
And the truth. Yes. Kids don't like lies because eventually they'll find out the truth and then you'll look like the bad guy or the bad one.
Especially when you tell them, don't lie to me, and you straight lie to them.
Yeah.
They don't like that.
Yeah. And lies are not only telling untruth. Lies are also holding back information.
I'm not going to co-sign that. Speak on it then, man.
Well, because, I mean, not everything is for everybody to know, honestly. You know, there's certain things that children need to know. There's certain things that children don't need to know. And there's certain times that you address this, you know what I mean? And that's just my personal belief.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to each your own, you know what I mean?
I got you.
Yeah.
I
do believe that there are certain things that children should just not know, but there are probably also things that the children don't need to know. And so I think that you should tell your kids what they need to know. And if you don't, then you're doing them a disservice, point blank, period. And so you as the parent, you have to make an educated and conscious decision about what those things are and what the difference is for your child, because there's no handbook that tells you how to raise a child, because every child is different, right? So you have to be so in tune with who your child is and what they need so that you know what they need to know. And then it is your duty, your responsibility as a parent to make sure they get that information, because if not, it will backfire on you.
So basically, if they ask the question, you should be able to answer it, or else they'll come up with their own conclusion or they'll ask their friends.
Yeah.
And we don't want that.
Or they won't ask. Or they won't ask at all, you know, or they won't ask at all. And that is just as damaging as them asking and getting, you know, a crazy answer from somebody else who doesn't know your family from Adam. That's just as damaging, them not asking at all and then just, you know, having to deal with those questions in their mind, because eventually they'll try to answer it for themselves.
Right. Okay. So Hamadi, do you actually change your stance on that, or is that your permanent stance?
Come on, man. You know better than that. I'm not going to change my stance on that. The older I get, the more stubborn I get, the less I care about what anybody else thinks about how I feel or what I – like, bro, I'm stuck. It is what it is, man.
There are moments when you just have to agree to disagree, right? But that's how I feel about that. And I'm younger than Hamadi, but I'm also stubborn in that way. I'm not going to change how I feel about that either. So agree to disagree.
No, but
the next question.
It's good that you're saying this, Deja, because it's refreshing, because Hamadi and myself, we're looking at this. Yeah, you know, we can bounce back if that happened to us as a man, but as a woman, we don't have any clue about that. And it's harder for us if we are, you know, Mighty has a woman, I have a woman as well, too, but if we're in a dating game, to understand that facet of what's happening with a woman, and that's not, you know, her trying to look beautiful, her trying to get a job. She has other things in her past, especially if she's from a broken home, that she doesn't understand how to cope with things and of that, because that's the thing that we're looking for. We're looking for a woman that is going to be able to come into our lives without a lot of problems. And then when we have this woman in our lives, then we really have all these problems. We don't know what.
Guys, how happy are that you're not dating nowadays?
Huh?
Huh, Greg?
What?
How happy are you that you're not dating nowadays? How happy are you?
At it.
Bro, I couldn't imagine.
Yeah, I can imagine something rough out there. Earlier, about, you know, got together very young and they got divorced, and now they have all this baggage with them.
Yeah.
Child, and then when they got an adult, they got more baggages, and then I can't do. You can't. And give you
100% himself. Yeah, I mean, you know what? Also, we can't.
That
80%.
You.
So Deja,
you're not gonna get you. You can't hear me?
Nah, bro. That's what I was about to take over again. I was about to go Han Solo on him.
Go. Clown.
Sorry, bro. About to take over. Oh, man, Deja, you've been excellent. I mean, I appreciate you putting up with us. I mean, it's not always easy to sit here and deal with the both of us at the same time.
Oh, no. I have enjoyed this conversation. Let me tell you guys something. I am so free on this side of things. And so it is a joy of mine to be able to discuss this topic with people and just, you know, have that dialogue. Even in moments like, you know, me and you, Hamadi, we can't agree on something, but we can agree to disagree and just say that these are different perspectives, because at the end of the day, there's probably a group of people who agree with what I said, but there's also a group of people who agree with what you said, and it's healthy for them to have those two different perspectives so that they can know that they're not alone in thinking the way they think. You know, because when we start to feel like, oh, I'm the only one thinking the way I think, you know, we can kind of go a little nuts. You know, we don't know what to do with our thoughts. But I love this dialogue to where people can say, like, okay, I can't really get with what she's saying, but I like what he's saying, so that they can know, you know, you're not the only person who goes through this. and you're not the only person experiencing the thoughts and feelings that you are. So thank you guys so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
No problem, Dave.
No,
Marty, you have any final words?
Don't agree. I don't agree. No, I'm joking. No, I do appreciate the dialogue. I think it's important, though, at the end of the day that we all do understand that we are all that we have. And it's important that
Absolutely.
We are raising young kings and queens, and that regardless of if you're a stepfather, stepmother, whatever position you play, the children are very important. They're always watching what you're doing. You can say whatever you want, but more importantly, they're watching your actions. And
mm-hmm.
people can always hear your actions way louder than what your words are saying. So just remember that, people.
Yeah.
Greg, you have any closing words you want to say? I do want to say welcome back, Greg. I mean, this is our first show back.
Yes.
And,
thank you.
Deja, relax, Deja. Greg, my moment. What are you doing? What are you doing? Oh my God! There's 3 minutes left, and here you go. Right? Here you go.
No.
Show.
Kamadi,
okay.
Don't try to play me. Don't try to play me because earlier you said you wanted the applause, so I'm giving you the applause. Fall back. Let me do that.
Get him. Mad aggressive, yo.
Perfect,
man. Don't
I couldn't
have done
without
okay.
you, David. Thank you.
Daddy's little girl. Listen.
Love you guys.
But all right, on a
Love
serious
too,
note,
Dave.
Greg. Welcome back,
yeah.
Greg. Thank you. It was very tough seeing you like that. I am glad that you are back in health. Looking forward to spending some time with you and the family in the very near future. And looking
Definitely.
Forward to our shows in June. And hopefully I will see you guys all soon. And Deja, maybe we could do a follow-up show with you. I'm sure afterwards Greg and I will speak to you off-air. And maybe we could set
Absolutely.
Something up and have later down the line, maybe in the summer, have another
okay.
discussion with you online, and we can add some callers to it, okay?
Absolutely. I'm down for that.
All right, there's 4 minutes, Greg. Anything else that you want to add?
Thank you for both of you guys for coming on to the show. Deja, we couldn't have done this without you. Please support Deja's book, Daddy's Girl. You can go to the RicesENT.com to look this up. She has other things that she's doing as well. Her and her husband are actually actors, as well as they do music ministry as well. So there's a lot of interesting things they have on their site. So please, please support our very own Deja Rice and her husband, Jonathan. Please support them. Also, we will have other shows coming up in the near future. Monty and I will be dealing in with a lot of different avenues, and hopefully you guys will tune in. I hope you enjoyed what we have for you tonight. And this was a great thing. I needed this. This is a long time coming. Sorry for the last time that we were supposed to have a show in November, and I had a cancer because of what had happened to me. But I'm glad
yeah,
you guys
came back.
Yeah, you're
dumbass. Want to have a stroke,
listening.
Bro?
Yeah,
you
I know. No, I had
a
an aneurysm, and then I had a stroke. I don't know why. Maybe because I thought about you, and then everything just went crazy.
I'm pretty sure that's
but,
what happened.
Hey, baby,
guys,
exactly
listen,
what
guys,
happened. I thought
guys,
of a body.
Guys, anybody in the East Ramapo district, honestly, real quick, tomorrow's is very important to go out and vote. Tuesday, May 15th, very important election for East Ramapo School Board. Please go out, vote, support Sabrina Charles-Pierre, Jose Cintron, and Miriam Moster. Okay, those three candidates hopefully will help change the lives of our students moving forward, at least change the makeup of the board in East Ramapo, and let's hopefully help these students get a better education, okay?
Yeah, my dad was really serious, but you should never cut me off when I'm talking. You understand me? You understand me?
Right.
Next time, don't cut me off, okay? That was really a important
right.
thing that you had to say, and I really appreciate it. But don't cut me off. Love you guys. Talk to you guys next time.
You just had to get the last word. Yeah, good night.
Good night.
Dumb truck.